everyone. I'm Tony. And today I'm going to start with my partner, Kamarudin Maranun. Kamarudin is someone who obviously is incredibly close to me, and so I know him intimately. But we are very, very different. And I think that's one of the great things about this podcast today is that you'll find out how different we are and at how well we can get on and how we built an airline, though we have quite differing views on many things. And Mark and I have known each other since school. We were in just kind of primary school together, and then we're in boarding school together, and then we kind of worked together in the music industry. And now Mark is very instrumental in Tune Hotel, in the kind of revival and rebranding of Tune Hotel. And he's been asked to also help, and he's running Epsom College now. Firstly, Kamarudin on my left.
Hi.
And Mark, who's on my right. Afternoon. But look, let's start off with how you've been coping with COVID first, you know, not having COVID, but what's it been like, Kamarudin, in this last year? You know, but both personal and obviously I'd like to get your feedback on, you know, what is it like to own an airline in COVID?
Well, that's a big question.
Wow, where do I start? Actually, on the contrary, it has been quite good. You know, I must say there's some blessings in this COVID as well on a personal basis, because you get to know your family better. You spend a lot more time with them. You get to do things that you've been procrastinating, you know, so you catch up on things. The only thing you're missing on the travel, like you say, but after some times, you get the hang of it. You still can travel, though not on a plane, but you still can see places domestically, enjoy the time you have, and the savings. The amount of money and time and resources you spend going abroad, right? You can better spend it locally, and you'll be able to spread that amount.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we don't want that for everyone, by the way. Otherwise, AirAsia won't have a business. but I share your sentiment. I share your sentiment.
No. Because AirAsia is regional. Yeah. You don't want to fly longer.
Yeah.
So you have your short, you know, short distances. So
I think that's what I've been selling to investors, and it's a really good point that, you know, different airlines are going to come back at a different pace. And I haven't talked to Cameron about this, but obviously we both feel the same way, that short-haul leisure travel is going to bounce back fast. You're more likely to fly to Phuket or Penang than you are to, you know, Potoma in the United States, right, or Washington, D.C. So, but let's see. But just, I echo what you're saying, right? It's been, you know, I actually probably do more work being at home because I'm very focused. Zoom has been pretty good. And I am doing things I never did before. I bought a bicycle. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Mark, how have you been dealing with COVID? You're equally in a tough business with Tune Hotel and Ormond and, you know, Epsom College.
Well, look, I think on the personal side, in a strange way, it's actually allowed me to really get back to the basics.
Which are smoking 4 packs a day.
No. It was.
Are you smoking more during COVID? Was there nothing to do?
No, I'm not, actually.
So that's a benefit of COVID.
Because I find I've actually got more to do.
Uh-huh.
Because you know, arguably speaking, you're not going out, you're not sort of necessarily entertaining, you're not going, you know, having dinners and stuff like that. Certainly not now. And it allows you the time to really focus a little bit more. I'm sleeping. I'm actually getting good sleep.
Yeah, yeah, your skin looks better.
Thank you. I'm losing
weight. Is that Korean cosmetics or?
No.
Sleep.
Botox.
It's not Botox or anything like that. It's actually just regulating and actually having decent amounts of sleep.
So one of the benefits of COVID, right? Business. I'm going to talk about business in COVID in a second.
But business in COVID.
No, COVID in business. That it's not all bad.
COVID during business.
Business during COVID times.
Dealing with COVID in business times. Maybe you should tell the audience about how you first heard about building an airline.
It was way back in, it was 96, 97. Right, I left RAP. You see, we sold Rosan Aziz Production the repertoire, not the company, the repertoire to Warner Music and set up another company called Rap Music. So you own the repertoire. And I was the first CEO. Good coverage. We were in, Billboard and all that. Unfortunately, we had this, not disagreement, but the way running the company, right? So I hate to see money wasted.
You and Roslan or who?
No, I was the CEO of RAP Music. Tony was like the group CEO at Warner, right? So Warner owns RAP Music.
I remember
so
that.
So we're a subsidiary of Warner. So like I say, that was one incident where Roslan wanted an extra 40,000 for that, which I'm against. And then I got frustrated. I said, we're supposed to be commercial. You gave me KPIs to make sure that we are commercial. And you approve things like that. So I said, how do I manage it? So I actually give up. I told him, I said, this is a dog industry, you know. I wanted to do my own thing. So I went into fund management and whatever not. So one day in, I think it was 96 or 97, he called me. We kept in touch. We became friends. So out of that joint venture, we started becoming friends.
The best thing about the joint venture was me and Cameron became friends.
Yeah. So he was my travel agent. So wherever I travel, I use Warner because they're worldwide, right? I always get good
rates. Yeah.
So anyway, one day he said he wanted to set up an airline. So I said, great. But the airline that you wanted to start was a biz jet, not a low-cost carrier, a biz jet. So we actually kept the proposal, and I actually met a couple of second boarders company, the CEO second boarder, not the main board, the big board, the small board. Because at that time, everybody was signing joint ventures abroad, right? So it was great to do deals overseas, mergers and all that. So the lower liners didn't have the opportunity. So we are providing them a jet that they can lease, they could do their corporate deals and sign their deals on the plane. We can wrap the plane, their corporate colors, change a new uniform, stationaries on the plane. So it was a great deal. So each of them will contribute like 10 million. So they get like 2 weeks or 3 weeks a year to use that corporate jet. So that's
basically the first kind of fractional ownership jet, right?
And
that was
then,
my first idea.
Yeah.
Cameroon had embellished.
Yeah. So which then I actually promoted and we got quite a good traction on that, you know? So I got a few people who indicated they would like to be part of that joint ventures, right? Fractional ownership. And then we got hit by the Asian financial crisis, remember? So basically, it's a standstill, right? Economy died, nobody doing business, you know, that exchange rate that started in Thailand. So that whole proposal was just kept in abeyance. You know, then we started doing our own thing. So I traveled to Iran, trying to do small businesses and all that.
I remember
then,
that.
Yes. And then it was no rush. I couldn't get out. So I actually drove all the way to the south of Turkey. And it was hard, man. It was winter, 18 hours stop, thing. And everybody was hassling me from police, the local.
Can you imagine driving from, just tell everyone again exactly where you were driving from?
From a place called Urumiye, north of Iran, into a place called Van.
How far was that ride?
It wasn't that far, but the
what
number of
what car were you driving, by the way?
It was an Iranian pickup.
Not that Lamborghini, I suppose.
No.
It was an Iranian pickup. You're driving from where?
Urumiye to Van.
This is in the middle of the Iran-Iraq war as well, by the way, just to let everyone know. Yeah, it was. There was a war going on at that time.
Oh, okay.
So, carry on.
But it was the Kurdish, because of the Kurdish incursion.
And which so the Kurdish are still fighting the Turks.
So, we got stopped by police, local village people, the army, you got this... So
tell people your Tun Mahathir story.
Yeah, because every time we get stopped, they say, passport, so I should. Malaysia, they don't know. But when I say, Tun Mahathir, Tun Mahathir, go. So obviously the Turkey love him, right? And I told Tun about it. And Tony, he just laughed about it. He said he's seen a lot of people using his name. That's the first time
literally
he heard it.
Yeah. So carry on.
So anyway, so I got to Van. So I call up Kim, who's Tony's PA. So she always handles my travel plan and all that. So I said, I need help. They say, Tony looking for you. So I said, yeah, but I need help. I need you to book me a hotel in Istanbul and arrange for a flight. I remember because you got Banat plug. associate
company. Cameron is the original low-cost man, right? So that's why it fit the business really well, because here he is in the middle of Iran calling me up to get cheap hotel rates in Turkey using the Warner Music corporate rate.
Not cheap, affordable. Anyway, he got me the thing. And then he got on the phone. He said, hey, by the way, you know, you got 20 million. I said, Tony, I'm asking only for a room in Istanbul. So he said, you got 20 million, 20 million. You know, I said, you get me the room, I get you the 20 million. And that's how it started, actually.
Yeah, you should say it, because I've said it many times. I said, I have this idea. You got 20 million. And he said, okay, give me the room first, I'll get you the 20 million. When I come back, I'll hear your idea out. Then you explained that you knew nothing. You came to my office, which was Warner Music's office, which had given me to get rid of me. And Mui Plaza, which is now called something else. Opposite the Shangri-La Hotel. And
I think a week later, I got back.
Yeah, so explain. I remember it was in the evening. I remember you came up in the evening and... I mean, it always had some guys following him around. Right? He's like a politician. He always had some mystery men. No, I think actually that time you came by yourself, right? So tell the story.
So anyway, we sit down and chat. And then I said, okay, what is this all about? So he said he wanted 20 million to start up a low-cost carrier and all that. Right? So he saw Stelios on TV. And he actually... went to look at...
Status of the EasyJet.
EasyJet, yeah. He was waiting for a flight coming back from New York, right? After frustrated with whatever he heard.
Yeah, I decided during to those, leave Time Warner.
Dot-com days. Yeah. So anyway, he told me that he got this great idea. We should start a low-cost airline here. So I said, okay, this is different from the one we wanted to start earlier, which is a BizJet. They said, yes. Okay, I said, okay. I'll match you. That's how we started, right? And then I'll get you the 20 million.
Yeah. He said 50-50.
Yeah.
I said, no, that's my idea. I want 51. But now we're actually completely equal.
Yeah.
And just describe to people, what did you think? I've never asked you. When I told you about the business plan, there was no, all these bankers produce memorandums. I want people to understand how truly entrepreneurial Kamaruddin was, right? He had the money. I had no money, or he had access to money. And he was a banker. I didn't produce a presentation. I didn't do anything really.
No, it's just a concept.
Yeah. So explain.
So how did you pitch it?
No, he wanted to do. I basically know a little bit about the airline business now because of the BizJet proposal, right? So you know roughly what the aviation industry is like. So, but what he's pitching now is no more the fractional ownership. It's more of a low cost carrier.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, but he was passionate about it. And I said, okay, we'll do the business. And I wanted to insulate it, so less risk. You see, aviation is a big boys game. Yeah. So if you're able to do it at low capital with low risk, it's great. You may have all the money in the world. Sometimes there's no opportunity to play the big boys game. So that was an opportunity. So I agree first. Then we do the study.
You agreed basically on a concept.
Yeah, I agree on the concept.
There was no business plan. There was
concept,
nothing.
Your passion, yeah. A little bit about the aviation because we did a paper and everything, right?
Yeah.
So, but it was his passion, the concept. And then the only thing I think, okay, how do you package it so that you don't take any excessive risk? So, but it was an opportunity to actually play the big boys game with virtually no money at the time, the way we've structured
There was no money. You know, I remember my side. It'd just be great for the world to hear how you remember the beginning.
So I somewhat know where we can actually go and find the guy who would have 20 million and would be interested in investing. Because at that time, I just made him about 70 million. So I was thinking that I could approach him and say, hey, look, give me part of the 70 million to invest in. And we are supposed to give him about 50%, 51 in fact. You know, you have control the thing, you know. So that didn't work out because obviously, you know, Tony went to present his case to the guy and I wasn't around. I was in Australia or something like that. And then you called me and said, hey, Dan, sorry, we blew it. Because the guy obviously... rich man, rich family. So he was saying something like, you know, why are you hiring
got the financing, didn't got the 20 million.
Yeah.
Me and Dato Pahamin went to see the guy. And, you know, I was briefing him what we've done. We've done this, we've done this, we've done this. And the guy said, well, how come you didn't tell me about it? You know, you're my partner. And I, in my normal direct style, he hadn't put any money in yet. I said, well, you're not my partner yet. Because you haven't put the money in, right? So I just said it.
So he got upset.
He got upset. He's rich sensitive. Dude. Rich dude who was sensitive. And
but we are friends still now.
Yeah, he's someone that we know very well.
Okay.
Now, and but he was smart as well because he believed in the model.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to mention his name now, but he'll know who he is. And he walked out of that. I walked out of the meeting with Dr. Parman. I said, I think I've blown it. I felt really bad. And Parman said, there's no problem. Tony, with your personality, it's better you don't work with anyone like that. And it was very wise advice from Dr. Parman. And I told Din, and Din was really cool. You know, I was, and I want people to know that. I mean, I just blew 20 million ringgit that we needed to start this airline. I said, you know what?
Then we restructured.
Yeah, I said, you know what? We're just going to have to do it another way because there are no money. But we both were confident, right? We never worried. And I think throughout our life, and now we're going through COVID, there's not 1 minute that we feel we're going to fail. We feel we're going to come back stronger and better. We never were dejected. We were never like, oh, no, this is the end or over. But talk about that. After I blew the 20 million, then we did we have a deal? We didn't, did we?
We were discussing with DRB.
Yeah.
And there was a 40 million liabilities at stake. And then we're talking about the one.
No, 100 million, I think.
No, 40 million.
Was it?
Oh, liabilities, yeah. 40 million.
Was 100 million.
Loan stock. 180 million loan stock.
Yeah.
They have given advance about 180 million. So there were about 40 million liabilities. So we've gone back to Datuk Tik and said, as opposed to we pay you off for the liabilities, I mean, share the liabilities, we go on the assumption that we didn't have the 20 million anymore. So he said, okay, we might as well use the 20 million as a, you know, to help us with the cash flow. So as opposed to putting the 20 million to DRB, we'll keep the 20 million because we can't see, we don't have money. Otherwise they say, you know, they'll shut the door forever. So we'll say, we'll pay as time gets on. Well, so they pay their 20 million, we pay our 20. That's how the liabilities of that 40 million were shared. So we bought at 1 ringgit and share the 40 million liabilities. Because it was supposed to be 20 million.
Yeah, so it's actually a kind of debt deal, right? But can you remember, go back, I'd like the audience to know, our first meeting with DRB HICOM, can you remember what I said when they asked me how much you're going to pay? You don't remember? So
yeah.
They said, how much are you going to pay for this airline? And I cheekily said, 1 ringgit. And they said...
Oh, you said 1 ringgit at that
time? I said 1 ringgit. And they said, you can have it tomorrow. And I thought to myself, damn, I should have said pay me.
That was to Datuk Tik or Ganesan?
Ganesan and Datuk Tik.
Was it?
Yeah. And I think another brilliant move from Din, there was a very smart person. Datuk Mazna, who last minute, I think she saw something in us. And she said, can we own
5%
of the airline, right? And I said, smart. I said, no problem. And Din was like, no. You know, this will be a problem because they'll stop us doing things, etc. So I remember still him negotiating that 5% out with Datuk Tik, right?
And Datuk Parmin was there.
Yeah.
So suddenly Datuk Tik came and proposed that they retain 5% because one of the board members, Datuk Mazna, wanted 5%, right? So in case we are successful, so they can, you know, they can basically monetize their shares. Anyway, you and Datuk Parmin agreed. So I was kicking your leg.
Yeah.
So I said, no. That's when we introduced a funder. There was no funder, actually. We introduced a funder. I said, okay, hang on. Tony, I think we talk. We need to consult our funder. Because I just wanted them to come out. And then I remember Tony said, hey, you don't screw this up. We are almost there. So don't let the 5% screw the whole deal. My concern is because if you want to cut clean, I didn't want any legacy, right? Because don't forget, DRB is still, you know, part of government, influential and all that. So I said, look, at the end of the day, 5% means nothing. To be fair, we also never expected the thing to, you know, exponentially grow like that. So I wanted to cut clean because we're going to put a lot of effort, resources, energy into it, right?
Yeah.
We're going to put our savings into that as well. So we didn't want that, you know, anybody to stop us from doing the things that we wanted to do. Even at 5%, DIB can be very influential.
Do they have a say on the board and stuff like that as well?
No, for 5%, I don't know what they want. I stopped at the 5% request. Right. So in fact, I told Tony, don't worry. Okay, God willing, we'll still go through it. But he said, you make sure they did go through. So what I did was, they were spending about $4 million a month trying to keep the company afloat. So I told Dato' Teh, essentially, I said, look, it'll take time for us to go back, rehash the whole thing, calculate whether the funder will be willing to go through the thing. So there is a time, it's not something they can afford. So they decided, they came back and they said, okay, let's forget about the 5%.
This is the way my partnership worked with Cameroon, in that, you know, we complement each other and we're strong. I would have done the deal at 95.5, and he was right, because he would have caused my
but you just wanted to do
just my personality. We would have had a lot of issues, I would imagine. So DRB were fantastic, and we were so lucky to have them because they were really supportive of us. But yeah, that's kind of how it's always been. There's always a check and balance, right? They will always think of something that I don't think of, and that's why it's worked very well. Actually, you know, after that deal, there was one shareholder who did stay on, Mofaz. And we made him a lot of money, actually.
Yes.
He just said, I'm going to ride with you guys.
0.75.
Yeah. In fact, his son drove a Formula 1 team. And he rode with us, and I think we got his money back plus more.
He got his money back.
Yeah. From a long way. So he was pretty smart, Haji Mofaz. Mm. Well, Haji Fauzi, mental block, senior Fairos. And that was that. So let's roll over. We've started. I first asked you about it when you're on the way from Iran to Turkey. I then meet you in Mui Plaza to tell you the deal. We missed out a bit because we roped in Dato' Pahamin.
We missed out the meeting we had in Kelantanjaya.
Yeah.
When they had the dinner.
Tell them about that. But let me just focus. So I want you to talk about that famous meeting we had with Dato' Pahamin.
Yeah.
You missed out meeting Tun because
Australia.
You were in Australia. I went with
Aziz. I want
to also talk about how we brought in Dato' Pahamin and Aziz. Rosman came to my house.
Yeah.
I never met Rosman before. Came to my house, and he's now still our ED, and he came to my house and he says, Din sent me here. I'm supposed to build an airline model. And the way he looked at me like you're a lunatic. And we're in a house and he says, where do we start? I said, really? I don't know. And the first hour we spent on the internet looking for the price of oil. And that was the start of the model. So we're at that stage. It's me and Din and Rosman doing that. I persuade Aziz Bakar in a sauna. We were in a sauna having a steam bath. And he was in BMG Music, which made the worst music but sold a lot of records. We were always jealous of them. All their music sounded the same. Slam, UK, Search, just had different length of hair. But they sold millions of records. And I said to Aziz, hey, do you want to join us? Now, Aziz is also another visionary because
he said yes.
Though he looks like he's stoned all the time, he just said yes. So I thought, God, the only people who believe in me are guys from the music business. You know, any banker I saw or any rich guy I saw was all like, okay, we'll see you, Mark Lancaster. and so we're at that stage, right? We've got Aziz in. It's me, Aziz, and Cameroon. Really convincing 3-0. And I said, one day in a Roti Canai store, I said, hey, you know, how do we get an airline license? And everyone looked at each other. Like, how long do you get an airline license? So we all looked at each other like, don't know. And then Aziz mentioned the famous Malaysian words, we need political connections. So we all looked at each other like, we have none. And so I then said, hey, what about asking Dato' Pahamin, who was Chief Secretary to the Government for Transport.
Domestic trade.
He was helping us fight piracy.
On the music business.
In the music business. And as I said, are you mad? You know, he throws people out of his office. He punishes people by making them sit outside his office in a desk. You know, he beats up taxi drivers. So I was like, hey, we got nothing to lose, right? So three of us went up there. Me, you, and Aziz, right?
Yeah.
And we presented to him, and he just listened. And he's a fourth visionary. He just said, this is a great idea. And you guys are honest and hardworking and smart. I'm in. What do you want me to do? And I said, can you be chairman? And he went, yeah, sure. I'm retiring soon. And I said, can you get us to see Tun Mahathir? And he said, oh, problem. I'm not sure Tun likes me much. But I said, let's try anyway. So we're at that stage, right? We've got Pahamin in. We've got, as you said, four of us now. We've grown from the two of us to four partners, right? In AirAsia. And we're planning to see Tun Mahathir, right? So then we see Tun Mahathir. I won't go through that because I've said it many times. Dean wasn't there. He was in Australia having a holiday.
Working holiday.
In the frigging Gold Coast. I'm like, never work that out. We had a fifth guy come in, SK Chia, who was the CFO. Rosman didn't join us, right? He thought we were on another planet.
Did he?
Planet Zeon, I think. And so he didn't join us. And SK Chia was supposed to be the finance director. So we had the meeting with Tun Mahathir. And I mean, I turned up at Putrajaya at like 6 in the morning, right? Because I was so scared about being late. The appointment was like 10, right? And Tun Mahathir is kind of a scary guy, right? You don't want to be late for him. So I turned up at 6 in the morning. Putrajaya was actually locked. The security door was locked. So I had to sit outside the steps. Finally go in. Aziz comes along. You know, some guy says, oh, you're seeing Tun today. He said, yeah. I said, why? About music piracy. And he said, no, we're starting an airline. Of course he laughed. But we were used to that by now. Everyone laughed when we said we were starting an airline. And then Dato Pahamin came in and SK Chia came in. And then Dato Pahamin was talking to a bunch of dudes in a suit. I said, who are those guys? He said, you won't believe it. Before we see Tun Mahathir, Malaysian Airlines are going in with their $8 billion restructuring. So I was like, okay. I was planning my next career in TikTok in 30 years' time. And as it, we're doomed. So then we get, and then the opposition saw him as well. Fadil Noor and Lim Kitsiang to ask for permission for Anwar Ibrahim to go for a back operation. So I thought, you know, he's going to be in a bad mood as well. So we go in there. I mean, I don't know if many people have been to Prime Minister's office, but it's a big office, right? So you can land a 737 in it. And he takes a long time to walk to the door. And he says, make it fast. I don't feel very well.
Oh, no.
That Obama had got the appointment, to his credit, with Tan Sri Badaria, who was very supportive and has always been a friend. And, you know, so I thought, great, opposition, MAS, and he's not feeling well. So he's like, whoa, welcome to AirAsia. And I brought out a CD, Music Always Saves the Day. So I pulled out an SM Salim CD, which I had recorded my last album at Warner Music, I had recorded with. And I brought the CD out. I said, I just bought a present for you, Tun. It wasn't Tun at the time. That was Sri, I think. And it was SM Salim, Tan Sri SM Salim, who's passed away now, one of my artists, duetting with Siti Nurhaliza with the Malaysian Philharmonic Orchestra, which was Tun's pet project, right? And he kind of looked at it, smiled a little bit. And then we did the presentation. And I did my dog and pony show. I made one joke about destroying Singapore. And he smiled a little bit. And then at the end of the meeting, he just said, you know, you have my blessing, but... So we were like elated for one nanosecond. And he said, but you have to go and buy an airline. So we came out of that meeting. And he said, he was also, I would say, the fifth visionary, was he said, you know, you guys are going to succeed because you don't know anything about airlines and you're really passionate. And I thought, wow. And he really knew everything about low-cost carriers. It's unbelievable. Yeah, he'd been to Ireland, he'd seen Ryanair.
Well, right.
And, you know, he really knew his stuff. And so, you know, we walked out of that room and my CFO SKHR resigned on the spot. So he was like, I can't, it was the second Mark Lancaster. He said, no, this ain't going to work. Where are you going to buy an airline from? You know, it's doomed. I quit. I mean, literally coming out of Toon's office, our finance chief resigned. Yeah, I haven't actually said that story before. Dean was still in Australia.
In the Gold Coast.
Nonchalant about what was happening. And I told Dean, and then he came back. Aziz Baka was like me. He was like, we'll find an airline. And Aziz Baka, who's always the bringer of amazing deals, came to us and said, there's an airline called Palangi Air for sale. And were you in the meeting?
I went to see the guy.
Okay, so you can talk about the story. But okay. I always remember that airline, the balance sheet didn't balance. Okay. I was an accountant. I'd never seen a set of accounts. Well, it should be Museum Negara. It didn't balance. So anyway, I didn't go to that meeting, actually. You and Aziz went, right? So maybe you can tell the public about that meeting.
Instead of buying over, he said, where do you invest in this? They mean allow them to manage it still and pump in about 100 million.
Yeah, they said, give us 100 million.
We'll turn
this around for you. Not in some way. We need 100 million cents, right? So we came out of that meeting and that was over. So then where are we going to buy an airline? And I'm super positive. There's a guy called Kanesan, who I knew was he used to do music stuff with us when DRB wanted concerts and stuff and had our Sheila Majid to perform in Langkawi and stuff. And I said, hey, you guys own an airline, don't you? And he said, yeah. I said, it's called AirAsia, isn't it? He said, yeah. And AirAsia was kind of a weird airline. You saw it sometimes. You saw it at the airport sometimes. You never saw it again. And I didn't really know enough about it. But I said, you're on that. And he said, why? I said, can I buy it? He said, you can have it tomorrow. We hate it. And that was the start. Fast forward, we buy the airline for 1 ringgit. On the night before we buy the airline, I think we heard that Mofaz was against us buying the airline and had appealed to Toon to sell it to him. So we thought, can you imagine the night before you're so excited about buying the airline? Everything's done. I couldn't sleep that night. You know, Din was very calm. He said, it's going to happen. God is on our side. We're going to get it. It was really calming influence. I was like, having a baby, right? I was going nuts. And then the next morning we heard that, you know, it was going to be done. Toon had supported us and said,
oh, wow.
And we were at DRB Highcom's office. And we come in to sign the deal. Can you imagine the, I don't ask Din how he felt, but for me it was like, fairy tale. Here, guys, no money, no experience, but we're buying an airline. December the 8th, 2001. And we signed the deal.
That was September 8th.
Oh, September 8th, sorry, yeah, September 8th. We asked for 3 months before we completed the deal.
But to be fair to DRB, they allowed us to go in before we completed.
Yeah, because we had, said, can we fix it? Can you allow us, even though we signed for it? We said we're raising capital, and me and Din had actually tried to remortgage our houses, which we failed, and to get more capital. And so we said, can you allow us to just get in and start getting involved? And they did, and it was fantastic, and that helped us immeasurably. But on the time we signed the deal, someone said, where's the 1 ringgit? And 1 ringgit for the airline and 1 ringgit for the debt. For
we converted the debt into...
We bought loans.
Convertible. Pref shares.
Yeah. Pref shares. Which we owned. And there was DIN structure. I still don't understand it, but it did make sense.
Well, that's for tax purposes.
Yeah. And... they asked us, and we didn't have the money. We opened our wallets.
And you didn't have a ringgit.
Who paid the ringgit?
We didn't have 2 ringgit. DRB gave us the 2 ringgit.
They gave
us. They had 2 ringgit. They lent us the 2 ringgit to buy the airline. That's a little less known secret. But me and Dan opened our wallets and we didn't have cash, which is pretty similar to right now. And we paid it, signed it. And then on December the 8th, we took over and I still remember Aziz Bakr. We were going to meet the staff. And the first pilot I met was Captain Nazli, who's still with us. And his daughter is very senior pilot with us. In fact, I remember she came to my house and she'd never seen a big TV before. And she said, you know, one day I want to be a pilot. And I said, I'm going to make you a pilot. And now she's an instructor, a very senior captain and a base captain. There are many great stories like that. But Captain Nazli, who is a bit like Rosman, doesn't smile very much. And he looked at me like, who's this dickhead from Anugrah Industry Music coming to own our airline? And it was our first staff meeting. And I think they all thought, we're doomed. Who are these guys? But it became a good meeting. Me, you, Aziz, and Dato' Parmin, I think we won them over, the 200 staff. And the cabin crew was saying, yeah, it's great. You know, one, I remember the chief engineer, Juan Hasma, said, no one's going to like low service, not low service, but low cost. They want service. But a lot of the cabin crew were very pro. They thought it was a great model, et cetera. And we came out of the meeting and we were having a kind of celebratory lunch with DRB. And one of the directors of DRB said to Aziz, so, how's the meeting? I mean, they were expecting Aziz to say, oh, you know, they're nervous because big company and us are small guys. And Aziz said, oh, they're really excited. They're so happy that we're the owners now. That was true Aziz Bakr. True Aziz Bakr style. So then what did you feel like? Can you remember your feeling?
I remember after the meeting, right, we were talking about the staff. We did talk about, may not be at length, but we talked about, the bonus that we have to pay them, you know. And actually we said we should go out to the airport and actually look at the operations as well, remember? So we went that night, we took pictures with the plane at the back.
Yeah, yeah. I remember saying to them, like, we now own an airline.
It was like a dream. It still doesn't dawn on you at that time, you know.
That so, you own an airline.
Yeah, but going to the airport, then you can feel it because you see the real
physical.
Yeah,
very famous.
You see the planes. There's that very famous picture of me and Din standing.
That was the night.
Behind an AirAsia plane.
The nighttime photo,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. December, yeah.
So that was the night where we...
But if I can roll you back a bit, just when we agreed to do the deal, we were in Pan Pacific Hotel.
Yeah. Well, okay.
And someone said, I think Din said, has anyone flown on AirAsia? And everyone looked at each other like, no, no, no one's flown on AirAsia. So there was a big discussion. And then I volunteered to fly on AirAsia, right? And ironically, they had a staff party there.
The Hajj
had a staff party there. So Din and Dato' Parmin went to check out to see what the staff were like and came out with a very strong positive approval that staff looked great and very happy. And that's a bonus. And I flew the next day to
KK. Was I the one who checked
out? I think so. Definitely Dato' Parmin was there. I think you were as well. Or Aziz, maybe.
What was was the company Tune Air?
Tune Air. The initial idea was to change the air, because we were all from the music business, to Tune Air. But Kathleen Tan, who became our commercial director, said it sounds like a Chinese swear word, which I can't
tune
repeat.
Tune Air, I get it.
And then they say it could be Looney Tune. It becomes a
serious business. And then the Minister of Tourism at the time, that was a Sheikh Kadeh Sheikh Fadeh, sorry, I'm thinking of his brother.
Yeah.
Said, you guys are stupid. AirAsia is such a great name. Why do you want to change it? And so he gets credit for that. He did tell us to change the uniforms to pink, which we didn't listen to. I said red was the right color.
We wanted orange.
Yeah, correct. I just didn't want to be red.
Yeah.
Because everyone thinks we want to be Virgin, right? We're music, want to be like Richard Branson. And I didn't want it to be red, but it was such a powerful color, right, that we all agreed red's the color and we kept AirAsia as the name. And I had this vision, you know, I wanted to, that was a bit like Virgin. I wanted to tune hotel and tune.
So that was the beginning of the tune group.
So we said, never mind, AirAsia. Now what's happened is AirAsia is taking over everything. So AirAsia is the master brand. So that was the start. We missed a very important story, though, Din, which is 9/11. I was watching.
Night after we signed.
After we signed on the 8th of September, 9/11 happened. I was watching Malaysia play football, and we were losing to Laos, which was probably...
You were in KL. I was in Langkawi with Rosman.
You were probably in Australia again.
No. In Langkawi with Rosman, celebrating.
So I was like, you were celebrating the deal. Yes. I was watching Malaysia lose to Laos. Can you imagine? We used to beat Korea. And I'm in the national stadium, and we're losing 2-0 to Laos, which has about 5 people, right? And I was like, the world has ended. And I was getting these SMS messages saying, America has been attacked, Twin Towers are falling. And I'm like, what is this? And then I come back to home, and it was attacked, the Twin Towers. And oil price went up to $100. And so Dean calls me up, or I call him up. And he says, are we going to do this? I said, hey, yeah, of course we are. People still have to fly to Penang and KK, so we go ahead. We do it. And actually, 9/11, in a horrible way, was a real blessing for us because plane prices came down and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I'm going to leave it at that AirAsia story because in the rest of it, everyone knows, right? All the bits on. And again, religion played a big part here. In that the contract that saved us was that AirAsia had a pilgrim contract and an army contract, but the pilgrim contract really helped us with cash flow. And, the rest is history. One of the great things about, and I would describe this as entrepreneurs, is having the gut feel to go and do something, right? So, yeah, when music, the gut feel was to spend a bit of extra money, which was wrong. But the gut feel to say, to do it. When I go through now and I see so many businesses and have to do 17,000 plans and all these things and all these Oxford and Cambridge guys analyzing you upside down, no one would have backed this airline. And yet this airline has flown over 600 million people, has created innumerable amount of jobs, direct jobs, 24,000, and now... We're trailblazing the internet world, right?
The other two things that you may want to include as a conclusion to the, to the business at all, is that one, we had passion. We're really passionate about the business. Second, we work hard on the cash flow. Because a lot of people start business with a proper capital. They say, we need certain amount of money as capital, right? So they look at profitability, but very little or not many people look at the cash flow. Because the profitability, it should be profitable, otherwise you won't start the business with, right? So the model will show profitability. But where you fail is managing the cash flow.
Mm.
So we started with virtually very little, if not, all right? So, but we work the cash flow. So we really work hard the cash flow. That's why within 6 months, we are able to pay off all the liabilities, the 40 million liabilities.
All
within 6 months, yes. We paid our portion of the 20 million.
That's
so
impressive.
I think that's key. When you look at the business, you look at the passion that you put in, the vision that you shared, and then taking a tight rein on the cash flow.
So, and that story has continued for 20 years. Then, explain a bit about religion and because I always say Din when I see him on Instagram, he's so happy. When he's in Mecca and always with his religious dudes. And I always a bit jealous, actually. I'm like, he's so calm. It's so great. It'd be good for the audience to learn a little bit about you from your religious side.
Okay. Maybe the best way to describe it, it's not just Islam. It's, I think, any religion. So long as you believe in God. I think most religion... we'll say one from the other. Like for us, we started with, in the name of God, most merciful, most loving, most thankful, So as I said to Tony, every time when we go through challenges, so he said, how come you're so calm?
I want the world to know, nothing has come easy for us.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. You know, we say the star will align, yeah, but not for us, against us. But anyway, going back to that, just so we will go through this emotion, these challenges, you know. But I've always stay calm, alhamdulillah, you know. And then he will always ask me, you know, how come you're so cool and all that? The first thing about religion is you believe in God. When you believe in God, you say, you know, in the name of God and all that. A lot of people say, but do whether they subscribe or not, you know. But the true believer would not only say, but subscribe. So if you say and subscribe, then you are in faith. Karina, we're talking about, okay, die in faith. And what is faith? Faith is believing. Mm. You say, but do you believe in it? So as I was telling Tony, if you believe in God, who is most loving, that means God loves you more than your parents, right? Nobody can love you more than God. God most knowing. God most forgiving. So whatever we go through in life, so just believe that anything happen is the best thing that can happen to you at that point in time. Because He's most knowing. He's most knowing and He's most loving. So why would someone most loving, you know, make you go through all these challenges unless
that's the question I always ask in.
That's the best thing. You don't realize it, but as time, you know, time will tell. How many times you go through life, a week, a month, a year later to say, oh, thank God. Because at that point in time, you don't realize the goodness in that. You only look at the worst case, right? But after you go through, the two things is, one, it keeps you in faith, right? You believe in God, you know, you subscribe to the faith. But more importantly also, from a physical aspect, you're psychologically better. Because you say, oh, okay, you know what I mean? This is the best thing that can happen. So you're thankful and you have the energy and the psychological means to proceed and try to overcome the challenge. Because if you don't, then you're disturbed. That's why people go drinking, jumping from a building, and do all those things. Because to them, that's the end of the world.
True.
You know what I mean? So, to some extent, spiritually, you're always thankful. Physically, you're in the best condition to overcome the challenges.
Yeah, Dan always says to me, he always says, everything happens for the best and there's a reason for everything. And
in time, we'll see.
I want to talk to you about, because I was really kind of wondering, why did this happen to us? Why were we given? And he always says, God puts that challenge in front of you to test you, to bring out the best in you, and maybe for others to learn from it.
And he will test people to the extent that he knows the guy can overcome it.
Yeah.
We ourselves don't know.
But and yeah,
he's
and,
most loving,
and that's,
right?
That's very true, because I've gone through things that you wouldn't wish upon anybody else.
If you had told me I was going to go through these things, I'd say, no, I'll be dead. I won't handle it.
And I want to say, last thing before I talk to Mark a little bit, Dean, is 8501, you know, when we lost an aircraft in Indonesia. And I thought, I mean, that really tested us. And even more than COVID. The first person I called whenever we have a crisis is always Din. And that's our relationship, right? Din wasn't in the Gold Coast. He was in Singapore.
No, I was in Singapore.
I know. No, I know very well.
You're always outside of the country.
Because you went to...
I do all the international business.
Because you went to Changi Airport. Because yes. That's where flight was supposed
to land. I was
the
first to arrive.
So he met the relatives first. So, yeah.
Okay, so that morning, Tony called me. He said, we lost a plane. So I thought, was it a prank? Was it just to, you know, to wake me up early or whatever? So he said, hey, we really lost a plane. I said, you sure? Because a lot of time they tested, then we it's just a test.
We had a few of these tabletop exercises where they didn't tell us.
Oh.
And, you know, it wasn't they say, oh, we lost an aircraft. I remember once I was with the Prime Minister and they said, you lost an aircraft. And I was like, I couldn't talk. And then later say, oh, sorry, we didn't tell you there was a exercise, right? But this was real.
Yeah. So I rush up to the, I said, okay, Tony, I'll go to the airport because I'm already in Singapore. You go to Indonesia. So at least we will coordinate. So the good thing there, I was the first to arrive. Almost the first. Our station manager was there. So I disbanded, no press conference, because I said the thing happened in Indonesia, Indonesia regulator, Indonesia soil, you know what I mean or not? So let us be, let's wait for the information to come in from Indonesia. Otherwise, it'd be pure speculation, right? So I basically canceled out the press conference, and we actually had tables in the room for every families, because there were families expecting, you know, some of the the guys to fly in for New Year. It was on the 28th, I believe. So we handled that, took all the, so all the question, I keep on referring, like, we'll pay for your tickets to go to Surabaya, because you might as well hear it from the regulators and the people over there who knows the thing firsthand. Because we don't want all this conflicting information coming in, having seen, you know, at that time, all the other crash cases, right? So that's how it happened. Then I flew to Jakarta to see you from Singapore. I think about 2 days, 3 days, because there were reporters in trying to smuggle themselves in as one of the, you know, family members who affected, just to get news, right? So we managed to curb it. And I must say the airport authority in Singapore was very helpful. So we said no press conference, so they cordoned the place, so they facilitated. And I then flew in a few days later to meet you in Jakarta. And then you said you had to organize in KL. I went to Surabaya. Mm. I stayed in Surabaya for 1 month. And then I remember, you know, we were organizing. And then I had one issue with one of the guests, who's not even a family member, who was sent in by the government to monitor the situation. I remember I told you, I really hate this guy. Because he said, you know, hotel not good enough. We were trying to get hotel near the place where the incident, so that you get fresh information. So until I said, at the end of the day, I said, look, guys, we are not organizing the Olympic, which we will have the benefit of 4 years of planning. This thing happened overnight. Within 2-3 days, we just have to organize it. We make sure every family member, one crew, one lady crew, one guy, one stewardess, and one steward, because they have been, you know, that's part of the job, right? Hospitality, they manage to, you know, take care of the family and all that. And then one doctor. So we got one doctor, one nurse, and that's the basic for every family. So I went to see all the staff. I went to every burial. Every burial of the staff. And the first burial, there was a miscommunication. I still remember miscommunication. So we went back to the hotel, all right? They found the guest. So that would be the first burial. A lady, forgot her name. So we at the hotel, I remember me, Rosman, Zach, and then we saw on TV, there was a burial. And as a Muslim, they would do some ritual at that night, right? Reading of the Yasin and all that. So I said, hey, who's our representative? So no one. Because I suppose we were so busy and all. So I remember going to buy Songko, we didn't come in Songko, right? So when me and Rosman, we went, took a cab, went to the house. Wow, man, going to this house, they were reading, everybody were looking at us. Who is this guy, right? I mean, like, we just pay respect and all that. But I think that one, we brought the family, you know, together. We just say paying respect, you know, can't be helped, right? And there were reporters from Metro TV and all that. Oh, I tell you, there was no SOP. But after the whole incident, we could write the SOP now. Mm. You know what I mean? It was done based on conscience.
Mm.
And I suppose being owners and being shareholders, being management and all that, we have the authority to decide. That's why it, you know, we'll be able to make decision on the spot to facilitate the whole thing.
I think the big difference was we were there and Din was there for 1 month.
1 month.
I came in and out. And we met every single family and we attended everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our own staff, etc.
But the staff also been great.
Yeah, AirAsia staff were unbelievable. There were staff there that spent 2 months there without seeing their families. I wanted to finish off with education. You know, which I think is a very active topic in Malaysia right now. Me, Kamarudin, Lim Kanon, set up a school that's obviously closely associated to me and Mark. I was sent to boarding school. Epsom College was strange. I'd never been to England before in my life. And, you know, my father kind of put me on a plane and And I arrived at Epsom College, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, what have I done wrong in my life? This is like a prison camp. I was really like, you know, I was really a mummy's boy, and I was really kind of spoiled. And suddenly I'm living in a dormitory with, looked like a hospital with, you know, 15 other white kids, right? And, you know, I remember the first dinner I wasn't invited to by my friends because I found out later they thought I didn't know how to use a knife and fork. So, you know, but I had a great time at Epsom, as I'm sure Mark did. I loved it in the end, and we loved it so much we built a school here. So, yeah, Mark, maybe tell us a bit how you feel and what your aspirations are and what do you think kids get out of going to Epsom, whether it is what I've said it is.
Well, I think one of the earlier questions you asked is, how are we coping with COVID-19? There's no two ways about it. Epsom, just so that everyone knows, it is an international day and boarding school. When people see college, they immediately think, oh, it's a university or whatever. It's just the way that English independent schools have been called for, you know, a century and a half. Epsom has been around 165 years. It's been doing its job mainly in the boarding school arena. And in 2014, when you guys had the foresight to actually say, let's bring this over and allow not only Malaysians, but everyone in Southeast Asia, because this is going to be the century of Asia, it's the rise of Asia. You guys had the foresight to say, look, rather than actually having someone fly 12, 13 hours over there, and you know, 7-8 hours time zone difference, have it here. Within Asia, we're all on the same pretty much time zone. You can easily pop in and out. Of course, we're 15 minutes away from the airport. So look, parents can fly in and out, kids can fly in and out, nice and easy. So, however, with the borders being closed, we actually have had quite a bunch of international students, roughly about 50% international student, 50% Malaysian. They can't come back in. So that side of it is in terms of new intake, evaporated. Nothing that we can do about that. Then the other things about, the reality about boarding school and what we do is almost basically exemplified by what I've heard from a lot of parents. This whole COVID-19 situation where everything is going online now, parents are actually getting the brunt of it. They're bearing the brunt of it. They are themselves, they've got juggling work commitments. They have to, they're working from home, sometimes needing to go into business or work. Their kids are at home doing online classes. And then they're getting, you know, SMS messages from the teachers saying, hey, your son, daughter is not logging on. So they're losing out on all the learning. Then because of all this stress, which they're going through, what's happening is that, you know, there's anxiety within the family space. Kids are, you know, really having a tough time doing 8 hours worth of online sitting in their rooms at home. And of course, let's not even talk about the financial effect on a lot of families across Malaysia. That's really been, we recognize that this is something which is very tough. So to your question, Tony, which is, how do we actually, what's our solution? What can we do for Malaysian families? And the main thing that we decided to do is, look, we have something which, generally speaking, a lot of parents actually don't realize what boarding is about, the element of boarding. A lot of them will actually think it's just, oh, it's accommodation and meals. So what we are saying now is we've come out with a program which is called our weekday boarding program. It gives parents, literally speaking, the best of both worlds. During the week, Monday to Friday, let us take the strain off you. It's something we've been doing for 165 years. We will then look after your children Monday to Friday. Friday evening, you get to go back to the family, where parents have put a full stop to the working week. They can provide real quality time. It's family connection time back in the weekends. Then on Sunday night or Monday morning,
come back to school.
So we have designed this with principally what you're talking in mind. How can we make this far more affordable? So we've just launched the weekday boarding program, and that one is comparable with all of the international schools on just their tuition fees, but you get boarding in this case. So that's at 99,000. That is starting in the new academic year in August, September, open for enrollment. I'm very pleased to say that things are actually really, really healthy, inquiries and enrollments coming in, because it's real. This is a solution. Parents are recognizing its great value. And secondly, they need to find some level of normality again.
But, I am thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, but it's not only that, because now it's better to send absent in KL, where UK is where it is.
You can't, exactly. It's a nightmare.
So this is a...
Yeah.
Well, I'm thrilled. I campaigned for it for a long time. I thank all you guys. Also, there are lots of scholarships available.
There's also one other thing. Can I just raise as well?
Yeah, for a small fee.
For a small fee. we've had, you know, in our local schools at the moment, we've had SPMs chopping and changing the whole time, right? So SPMs were moved, delayed to January, and then moved and delayed again to the 22nd of Feb. And a lot of students and parents are really dismayed with the fact that they've lost so much time. Yes. They're not getting back on course. So what we've done as an answer to that as well is, normally A-levels is a two-year course, 22 months or 24 months, right? Lower six, upper six. What we've done is to get you immediately after your SPMs, which will be starting 22nd of Feb, ending end of March, we're starting a fast-track A-level program on the 19th of April. They can immediately slip straight in. We accept mock SPM results, forecast results to come in. We've compressed it. They will actually take their exams in summer 2022. So it's a 13, 14-month program. They will board in. And the reason for that is, as you mentioned, all of our boarders get the benefit of literally tuition in the evenings after. Our teachers live in. So apart from classes, you will be able to actually get the support, personalized support from all your teachers and the subject teachers. You will have the ability to really have a great school life in a 50-acre.
It's a wholesome educational
day. It's holistic. Yeah. It's the whole kit and caboodle, yes. The whole package. And again, that one is a solution that we're seeing parents are saying, this whole COVID has really dealt me a bad deck of cards, but I need to get my kid back on track. And how do I get him back into, instead of actually...
So is that some open?
It's open, government? But they close down to others.
So this is really straight talk. Nothing was prepared. It is everything from the heart. If you want to keep connected with me, that's me, Tony Fernandez. Subscribe to the show at Apple or Google Podcasts or wherever you consume your podcasts. Until then, bye.